You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
What an embarrassment of riches tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I feel as though I'm the radio equivalent of Scrooge McDuck swimming around in his gold coins and all of that. Peter Brimelow in the first hour, followed by the one and only Jared Taylor now in the second. Jared, of course, the most interviewed guest in TPC history with regards to regularity of his appearances, and for good reason. He is the editor of American Renaissance, the author of so many books you need to know and have, Paved with Good Intentions, White Identity, and If We Do Nothing, among those titles. Jared, welcome back tonight. I know it's been a busy day for you.
Thank you so much. Yes, it has been a busy day. I attended an inauguration ceremony, and it's the first inauguration ceremony since you and I, thanks to your kind invitation, attended the inauguration ceremony for Donald J. Trump.
Never forget that one and how close we were. That was an article I still revisit from time to time at amren.com. Thank you for mentioning that.
No, it was really a wonderful, wonderful day. And again, it was entirely thanks to you that we had ringside seats. I could have lobbed a baseball up over the little plexiglass window and bonked Donald on the head. We were so close.
Well, you know, maybe we should have now, seeing how it all turned out. But no, but just kidding, Secret Service. And, you know, by the way, we're supposed to be domestic terrorists, according to the new president. But we got vetted by the Secret Service. You didn't get those seats without turning in your credentials. And the Secret Service said we were good enough. So we'll go with them with regards to our worth and credit. But no, that was certainly when it was all still ahead of Trump in January of 2017. But now here we are. A few years later, and another very interesting character. We could spend a lot of time talking about Glenn Youngkin. I want to hear what the inauguration was about, and I told you just a moment ago, take as long and as wide of a runway as you would need to land this commentary. But we were speaking with Peter Brimelow just a moment ago about what seems to be coming in November of this year with regards to the Republicans just taking over the government full throttle. And they are, of course, the undeserving beneficiaries of this backlash, this racially charged backlash with ever radicalizing, and I mean that in a fond and affectionate way, of the GOP base. The Republicans are going to romp to back into power in November, it would appear, at least as we sit right now. But will they do anything for us then? That's the age-old question, and the answer has always been no up until this point. So Glenn Youngkin, though, I think, Jared, is among the most interesting of the characters because he, as much as any Republican, truly got elected because of racial backlash, particularly with regards to critical race theory in the Virginia school system.
That is absolutely for sure. For those of you who are listening who are not familiar with Virginia politics, he made a great deal about the fact that his opponent, Terry McAuliffe, had poo-pooed the idea of critical race theory being taught in schools, and even went so far as to say that parents really just shut up when it comes to the education of their children. And Glenn Youngkin really stuck it to him on that. Now, so you're absolutely right. I think that he did come to power on the back of increasing white racial resentment. Judging from his performance at this inauguration ceremony, I'm afraid we cannot expect much. This whole thing was just drenched in multi-culti. From the guy who gave the invocation prayer, the first prayer, he was black, and he reminded us that this is Martin Luther King's birthday. He quoted Martin Luther King. And the guy who gave the final prayer, he was a Hispanic, and his final words were in Spanish. And believe it or not, there was even a delegation of Indians who gave a blessing dance. It was some of the weirdest, wildest caterwauling you ever saw. But they were They're whooping and hollering in their feathers and beating their tom-toms. And I would say that there was as much applause when Winsome Sears, this black woman who is lieutenant governor, when she was introduced and sworn in, as for Youngkin himself. And I will point out, of course, that the crowd was overwhelmingly white.
Sure.
I would say it must be 99.5% white, 99.9%, an occasional non-white face, and quite a good-looking crowd, too. I'm not sure the last time I've seen so much long blonde hair on tall, well-dressed women.
You're killing me. You're killing me.
And these are the people. These are the people who just whooped with joy when this black woman, who was born in Jamaica, is introduced and sworn in as lieutenant governor. And, of course, Youngkin himself was boasting about how this is the most diverse statewide administration we've ever had. Because, oh, yes, and all these poor, goofy white people are just, oh, they can't shut up how happy they are with this.
You know, but that's not why they voted. Jared, as you know, there's no doubt about it. They voted for this, not even implicitly, but borderline explicitly, because of the racial animus of that very racially charged issue. They didn't vote for this multi-culti nonsense. My goodness. I mean, you know, I remember you mentioned before being at the Trump inauguration. I remember you and I looking at one another when Chuck Schumer got up there to talk. Like, what is he doing here? What is this revolution? What I'm hearing about what happened today seems to go far and beyond whatever absurdities Trump may have infused into his inauguration with allowing people like that to speak. But this is not what they voted for, and it didn't take him a few weeks to pivot right back to, what we would expect.
There is very little reason to have much hope from Youngkin and his pals. On the other hand, when he was giving his inaugural address, he said something about, and we are not going to teach, I can't remember what exact words were, I wrote them down, and I'm probably going to write something about this later on in more detail, but he said, we are not going to have divisive nonsense taught in our schools, and that did get a huge round of applause. But then he did say, but we will teach our students the good and the bad. And we have had terrible chapters in our history. So he's already throwing a sop to the other side.
Yeah.
It was really not at all encouraging. Also,
so
they had a parade. They had an inaugural parade. All these people going by. And from the cadets at VMI, who are a very spiffy-looking bunch,
hey, that's Stonewall Jackson's alma mater, ladies and gentlemen. That's Stonewall Jackson. Remember his name anytime you think VMI.
Yes. They were marching by. They looked great. They had these M14s on their shoulders. I asked some guys later, well, they don't even have firing pins in them, so they're just decorative. But they look good. They're marching by, and then they're followed by all of these ragtag Hispanic and black groups. It was something else.
Hold on. You know, of course, we want good news, but we got to take the bitter with the better, do we not, ladies and gentlemen? Well, we got to know and understand and hear the truth, no matter what it is. Jared Taylor's giving us a dose of the bitter medicine. We'll be right back.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Well, we've had two of the very best of the very best tonight. Peter Brimelow, Hour One, Jared Taylor, right now, VDare.com and Amren.com, respectively. Folks, you get no better than these two gentlemen, and they are the epitome of that word. So, Jared, this wasn't really something you and I were exchanging some messages earlier this week. Not really something we had intended to cover tonight, but with your kind indulgence, I'd like to spend just a couple of more minutes on this because it will, of course, take us into the depths of a broader conversation, and that being with regards to Glenn Youngkin's election in Virginia. He was elected by this ever-radicalizing base of Republican voters. Who since have a sense of foreboding that we have had for years. Not that we fear anything, but we are realists and we see things that aren't pleasant and aren't good for our families. And of course, we want to safeguard our progeny, and we fight for our past and our present and our future and all of that. But Glenn Youngkin, if this is sort of a foreshadowing of things to come in November, this is just the same old cycle we've been through for years and years and years now. The Republicans taking advantage of its white base and giving them absolutely nothing and less than nothing. They won't even mention them by name. You know, they'll have a shaman up to give a war dance at the inauguration, but I didn't hear it. You know, you weren't up there, native son of Virginia.
James, it was a peace dance. A blessing dance.
Oh,
don't get us
that's
wrong.
That's good. Here. Well, I need to be corrected.
Correct. Yes, they blessed Youngkin and his administration. And as I say, Youngkin was boasting about how diverse it is because although he's white, poor boy, he's got a black lady who is lieutenant governor, and then the attorney general is a Hispanic, and oh, they're just so happy about this. And Youngkin himself quoted Martin Luther King. He reminded us that this was Martin Luther King's birthday, and we were going to rightly celebrate it as a national holiday on Monday. But he quoted the great man, bent the knee, and the justices who swore everybody in, I think in all three cases it was a black justice. They got some black person to come and swear them in. It was really quite a celebration of the multi and the culty. Now, I must say, I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I don't think I have ever set foot on the State House grounds before, and this is where it was held. They still have a statue of Stonewall Jackson. Did you know that?
I'm pleasantly surprised to know that. How did they miss that one?
I don't know. I don't know how long he's there for. And furthermore, there is a beautiful equestrian statue of George Washington, and it is surrounded by must be half a dozen famous Virginians, people like Jefferson, Madison, John Mason, and every one of them is a white man. No phony baloney stuff there. So I don't know how they're going to stomach all of that horror right there on the State House grounds. But yes, after all this was done, they did have this march by in a parade. But they had Vietnamese for Youngkin. They had Hispanics for Youngkin, and just one ragtag group after another. They had some sort of broken man group. This is a bunch of blacks. I don't know what the broken men are and why they were parading. But they had one white choir that started things, all white girls, and then of course they had all black girls to close it. It was about as mixed as you could find.
It sounds like you integrated the whole proceedings. I know the crowd there, as you mentioned, was 100%, virtually 100% white, but yeah. The people on the podium, and this is always the case with these Tea Party type conservatives.
Yep.
And I have always thought that this would be what we would get in November. I mean, you pass this prologue, so this isn't me looking into some sort of an oracle and coming up with a new idea. But how do we reconcile this, Jared, with the report that American Renaissance put out last fall, which of course came after other polling institutions. Came to some of the same conclusions that the Republican base is radicalizing on racial lines. But they're electing people like this who will never mention them, and they will continue to do that. They continue to be rewarded while not giving anything. These people have nowhere else to go. We've heard all of this. Yeah. That was Trump's downfall, by the way, with Kushner, believing that with the Platinum Plan. They did have somewhere else to go, that they could go home. And that's what they did, and that's what caused Trump re-election. But how do we reconcile the good with the bad? The good being that the Republican base is becoming more race conscious, but unfortunately, when they manifest that at the polls, you get Glenn Youngkin.
That's exactly right. I think we can definitely take heart in the fact that ordinary white people are waking up. There's no question about that. The manifestations of this we see everywhere. More groups quietly forming together. They're not seeking publicity, they're not taking risks, but they're just quietly getting stronger. And I won't tell you where this was, but I was invited to speak at a Christmas party for a group in a city, a major city, and they had 100 people there, and they've got a network of about 200 people. They're all helping each other out. They're building a genuine white community, and I suspect this is happening, and I know of one other place where this is happening. And I see this happening more and more. But you're absolutely right. Those people, though, are talking about running somebody in local elections. But that is what we have to do. We have to have our voices heard where laws are made and where power is exercised. And we're certainly not getting that from Glenn Youngkin.
But as you mentioned, that group that you're speaking of and others, they are coalescing, and there is something happening now that I think the power of which has not yet been properly harnessed. Now, I will tell you this, and I'm not joking. If ever there were a Congressman Taylor, say you ran, and Peter Brimelow was talking about this in the last hour, encouraging hardy, sensible candidates to run, still believing in practical politics and running and winning elections and whatever. I think, Jared, there is a hunger, a starvation, in fact, out there for Glenn Youngkin to be a Jared Taylor. And I wonder if someone like us could run and win and not just dog whistle and throw a little red meat out rhetorically during the campaign, but actually act on it, and like we hope Trump might. I wonder what kind of impact that would have. I think first of all, if you could withstand the arrows and the spears of the media, as we have all had to do without any power here at this radio broadcast and, of course, at Amrin.com and elsewhere, if you can withstand that, you know, perhaps you could have, as my co-host has mentioned, a squad, sort of like what AOC has with the squad. You could have a squad of people like us, and from there it could grow. I think that could happen.
I'm quite convinced it could happen. And it's just a matter of time. People have to start small. People have to start for the state house or for school board or for city council. And somebody who does not have a record like yours and mine. I mean, I have probably published a million words. They're going to pick through that and find stuff. But somebody who comes fresh, who is smart and attractive, and does not have anything they can hang around their necks except for what they say right there on the stump. I'm convinced that there are jurisdictions in this country where such people can be elected to office and before long to Congress. And I think it's just a matter of time. I'm convinced that as more and more people listen to your radio broadcast, come to Amran, read VDare, as more and more people do that, things are going to happen in ways we can't even predict. But the issue is for more people to agree with us, see what is at risk, and act. And I'm convinced that's coming.
Now that is a bit of good news and hopeful thinking that we can hang our hat on even after hearing about the monstrosity that was the Glenn Youngkin inauguration. But we thank Jared Taylor for telling us about it. But now we got to pause and transition, pivot, if you will, to some other news that he's covering at Amrin.com. And we'll do that next. Stay tuned, everybody.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The FBI is assisting with a hostage situation at a Jewish synagogue in Texas. A man claiming to be armed has taken the rabbi and three others hostage at Congregation Beth Israel in Colleyville, Texas. The suspect is claiming to have put explosives in unknown locations and has demanded to speak with his sister, who he says is Afia Siddiqui, a Pakistani neuroscientist who was convicted more than a decade ago in New York of trying to kill American military personnel and FBI agents in Afghanistan. The hostage taker inside the synagogue is apparently demanding to have his sister freed from prison, where she's serving an 86-year sentence. The Biden administration and Texas Governor Greg Abbott say they're closely monitoring the situation in Colleyville, which is just northwest of Dallas. This is USA Radio News.
Trust. Maybe a small word, but with huge ramifications. At Fellowship Home Loans, we want to be the mortgage lender that you trust.
Fellowship realizes that trust is earned and can easily be lost. That is why we listen not only to the wants, but also strive to understand the need.
Take a look at our Google reviews and our A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. But that's just the beginning. What matters is you.
Give us a chance to earn your trust, not just your business. Fellowship Home Loans, 800-804-SAVE. That's 800-804-7283 or online at fellowshiphomeloans.com.
We will listen and put together a plan to help make your dreams come true. Fellowship Home Loans, 800-804-SAVE. That's 800-804-7283 or fellowshiphomeloans.com.
Fellowship Home Loans. Welcome home.
Intercontinental Capital Group, DBA Fellowship Home Loans, Equal Housing Opportunity Lender, MLS number 60134.
A winter storm is hitting the nation from the Carolinas all the way up through the Dakotas. Store shelves are being emptied as people prepare for the storm. In eastern Minnesota, wind gusts of up to 20 miles per hour made it difficult for anyone trying to keep the streets clear.
The wind will make life a whole lot worse for us. I mean, you can keep up the snow, but the wind's not going to be your friend at all.
The National Weather Service says some people might see as much as 20 straight hours of snow. And the West Coast is watching for high water due to a tsunami advisory after an underwater volcano erupted near Tonga. Dave Snyder is at the National Tsunami Warning Center.
We've heard of some minor impacts there around the Los Angeles area, parking lot flooding, I think. But on the other side of things, we've heard of impacts around Hawaii, where they've had boats moved out of the water and onto the dock. So we're just beginning to see that from the initial wave moving in.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Yours truly, James Edwards, along with the great Jared Taylor, amren.com. Be sure to support the work there at American Renaissance, their conferences, their news, their original reporting. And, you know, again, this is an entity that has no equal. I mean, we've had two of the very best tonight. I mean, quite truly, without exaggeration or anything else, Peter Brimlow and Jared Taylor tonight. Great night of radio here on TPC, as it is every night, but tonight especially so. Jared, I appreciate you spending a couple of segments talking about your experience today, just today, in fact. This is hot off the press for you, ladies and gentlemen, at the Glenn Youngkin inauguration, and what we can expect. And what we can expect in November, I'm sure, is more of the same, but there is still... as Sam Cooke put it, a change is going to come. A change is coming within the Republican base, and we'll see where it goes, even if it is not manifested right now, in the here and now with somebody like Youngkin. But we do need to switch gears now. A lot of stuff to cover and only two segments left with Jared to do it. Very unfortunate news again, an unfortunate situation, an unfortunate verdict, and I know it didn't get all of the fanfare and play and coverage that the Kyle Rittenhouse or even Derek Chauvin trials did. But you wrote a commentary very recently, Jared, just a few days ago. Justice for let me speak it this way: justice for Ahmaud Arbery, because there was a question mark at the end of that headline.
Yes. This was pretty much expected after what I think is an absolute travesty of a trial. These are, of course, the two McMichaels, Gregory McMichael, and that's the father, and Travis McMichael, his son, along with a fellow named William Bryan. His nickname is Roddy. These three guys who are now going to go down in history as essentially having lynched Ahmaud Arbery, the poor innocent jogger. This is it's just been a travesty right from the start. As I'm sure you and your listeners know, the initial prosecutor that looked at the situation, George Barnhill, he said there should be no charges filed at all.
That fact cannot be repeated enough. Pardon the interruption, but that is something that needs to be repeated every time. And these men's lives are ruined, and they got ruined right before Thanksgiving. I think it was the day or two before Thanksgiving, which was also suspect. You know, they could have been home, but now they're not, and now they'll never see each other again.
No. It's absolutely horrible. According to Barnhill, and I see no reason to disagree with him, he's a prosecutor, a veteran prosecutor. They were trying to make a citizen's arrest, which was perfectly legal at the time. They were armed, which is perfectly legal. All they did was drive up this guy, for whom they had excellent evidence that he had repeatedly been trespassing on a house that was under construction, just two doors down from them. That was absolutely true. They drove up to him as he was running off. He was sprinting off because somebody had seen him on the property yet again. And they just rolled down the window and said, "Look, we want to talk to you." He would not stop. He kept running. And then finally they got out. And, of course, they called 911 because they wanted the cops to handle this. You call 911 when you're about to lynch somebody? Absolutely, and of course not. And, of course, as everybody knows who's seen this video, what Ahmaud Arbery did, instead of running off in some direction, which he could have, he darted around the truck that Travis McMichael had been driving, darted right around and ran right into him, despite the fact that he was holding a shotgun. Travis Michael had been a law enforcement guy for the Coast Guard. He'd done all sorts of training, hand-to-hand combat, use of weapons, and one of the key points is you never let somebody disarm you, because that person could very well shoot you and anybody else on your side. And the video is very clear. There are a few little shaky moments when the actual point of contact is off the camera, but it's absolutely clear that Arbery went for the gun, tried to take it away from him, and Travis McMichael shot in self-defense. Now, this guy has been convicted, as well as his father, who was just standing in the back of the truck, of George's equivalent of first-degree murder. They have been convicted as if it were true that they had simply been out looking for some innocent black man to gun down in cold blood. And, of course, they drove around after him for 5 minutes as this guy is running away. If they'd wanted to shoot him, they could have done it any time. They wanted to stop and talk to him. And, in fact, they had given up chasing him and had parked the truck and were waiting for the police to come when this guy runs straight for guy with a shotgun. Now, what is he supposed to do? Let Ahmaud Arbery beat him to death, take away his shotgun and kill him with it? No, it seems to me that this is a clear case of self-defense. But not only were they convicted, they're now sentenced. Travis is sentenced to life in prison, and his father, Greg, who's in his 60s, he's sentenced to life in prison also. Those guys are going to die in jail. And then the 52-year-old William Roddy, he might be able to get out 30 years, no sooner than 30 years. Now,
well, you know, he got almost life in prison, I mean, essentially life in prison, for being there to document it for posterity's sake, for the sake of police or whatever. I mean, you're convicted of murder because you document the encounter?
The way the legal rationale for this was is that he is an accessory because he committed a felony as these guys committed the murder. And the felony that he's said to have committed was trying to head Arbery off with his automobile, which is a deadly assault or a potentially deadly assault. That's his felony. And so for having done a felony and in conjunction with these guys and it ended up somebody dying, he is guilty of murder and will be eligible for parole at the soonest in 30 years.
Well, now, you know, and Godspeed and, you know, my God. I mean, you know, this is just so terrible to even consider. Yeah. This is, you know, our friend Courtney from Alabama, you know her, Jared, yeah, a good friend of ours here on this program. She wrote about this trial. I was disgusted, no even point in having a trial. Can't imagine having to sit there and listen to someone lie about what you did in front of the world on television, and then most of the country is cheering for it, it seems, at least, and hardly anybody is supporting you, and you just have to sit there and just let it happen, knowing that you have this terrible fate awaiting you. Your response to that?
Another aspect of this that's hardly been covered is the kind of systemic intimidation of the jury and the entire proceedings.
They sent
1,000 summons for jury duty, and only half the people showed up. That is a remarkably low number. Most of the time, you get a much higher number of people who show up, but they knew it was for this Arbery case, and it took them 14 days to seat the jury. Nobody wanted to serve for all the obvious reasons. They knew there was going to be intimidation. And sure enough, every day they had gangs of blacks out there in front of the courthouse. A couple of times they had Black Panthers swaggering around with assault rifles, black rifles. And on the very day of the sentencing, they had dozens of them out there. And in the courtroom, they had Jesse Jackson, they had Al Sharpton sitting there in the visitor's gallery, eyeballing the jury, and one of the defense lawyers says, look, this is intimidation. You can't have this going on. All these people whooping and hollering outside. There was a big mural of Ahmaud Arbery on the wall just about a block and a half from the courthouse. It was clear how these guys had better vote on the jury.
You know, Jared, if I could just very quickly say, if you don't believe that this has an impact on the jury, you're wrong, because I listened to every minute, almost literally every minute of the Charlottesville civil trial, and I even heard the jury selection. You could dial in and listen to this, and I heard juror after juror after juror say that they were afraid of Antifa or they were afraid of somebody coming to their home and visiting violence upon them. So if you don't believe that this has an impact on the jury, you're sadly mistaken.
Yes, you're 100% correct. And just imagine, say you had I mean, as I say, we had these black Panthers all dressed in black, all carrying rifles, swaggering around, justice for Ahmaud. What if you'd had Ku Klux Klansmen in their robes with crosses waving around saying, justice for the McMichaels? Or what if you'd had half a dozen guys in the visitor's gallery every day dressed in khaki pants and white polo shirts and then going to the press and saying, look, these guys are innocent. We insist that they be acquitted. You think they'd have been allowed to do that?
No chance.
It would have been called intimidation. It would have been called a hate crime. So the double standard here is absolutely appalling. And the guy that I think is most culpable is the judge who went along with every bit of this. Yes. That guy, he's an ordinary white guy. We can't blame it on some sort of mulatto judge or some kind of Indian or off-white or who knows what. He's a sure enough white man. He did this to them.
Well, I'll tell you this, and you probably can attest to this as well. I can tell you that the most opposition I've ever received has been from white people, and in fact, in many cases, white Christians. So this is the way the cookie crumbles. But we will talk a little bit more about this and a couple of other things Jared is tracking at Amrin.com in our final segment with him right after this.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina is a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The CDC just reported that 7,218 people died after receiving a COVID-19 shot. Granted, vaccines are a complicated concoction of chemicals, and as with any medical experiment, it can take a long time to get it right. This is not the first time people have been hurt when vaccinated. What is different this time, and so concerning, is the reaction to these death numbers. Let me explain. In 1976, the government vaccinated 45 million people for swine flu. A total of 53 people died after getting that shot, and the U.S. government immediately halted the vaccination program. Why? Because authorities decided it was too much of a risk. Why would they halt the program back then for 53 deaths, but now, with over 7,000 deaths, they are using every method possible to force it on you? In fact, now the health authorities are using their power to silence anyone who dares to question the COVID vaccination. Why? Why is anyone that questions COVID silenced? Even doctors are being censored. What's up with that?
Paid for by Ammon Bundy for governor. Vote Bundy.com.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Always great to have Jared Taylor with us. We look forward to the next appearance already. And to be sure, to be sure, we will have him back on at least a time or two in advance of this year's midterm elections. And we were talking a little bit about what we can expect from that. I guess the short answer is, if you're tuning in late, not much. But if Glenn Youngkin is any indicator, but we'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens together. And as long as we are together, we still have hope. While we breathe, we hope, I think, is an old Latin saying. Anyway, JaredAmrin.com, of course, is the website. You're always monitoring and tracking and providing for us the commentary we need to sift through these delicate issues, as it were. Let's talk about Chicago's race-neutral traffic cameras. This is something you sent to me. Pretty interesting story.
Yes, I thought this was most remarkable. This was a lengthy research project and likewise lengthy article put together by a nonprofit news organization called ProPublica, which is relentlessly liberal in the worst sort of way. And the title of their story, when I saw this, I thought, what the heck? And the title is Chicago's Race-Neutral Traffic Cameras Ticket Black and Latino Drivers the Most. Race-neutral is in quotation marks, scare quotes. So I thought, well, whoops. Here we got traffic cameras. You don't even have some racist Bull Connor cop behind the wheel waving a billy club pulling over blacks and Latinos. No. These are just cameras that catch you if you don't stop at a stoplight or if you're going too fast. And lo and behold, black people are more than three times more likely than whites to get these automated traffic tickets, and Hispanics are twice as likely. And blow me, if they didn't actually try to couch this as some kind of racist oppression, it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And to me, I thought if they had uncovered something like this, if they had discovered that, as it turns out, these utterly unmanned cameras, all they do is check speed and whether or not you stopped when you're supposed to stop. And if it turns out that blacks are three times more likely than whites to do these bad things, I would have thought they would absolutely deep six that. They would never publish something like that. But no, they publish it, and they say, yet another example of racism. Quite incredible. And I'll let you break in here, James, but they even dug up somebody named Ula Tunji Oboy Reed. He's obviously out of Irishman. And he says the root cause of traffic violence in our society that is disproportionately impacting black and brown people, it's structural racism. That's the problem. Black pedestrians are twice as likely to be killed as people of any other race, and that's racism too. Those cameras are racist. And they talked about how in certain other cities, in Rochester, New York, and in Miami, they ended the practice of these cameras that take you when you are breaking the speed limit or failing to stop because they impacted the poor and the downtrodden and the marginalized. So once again, these are standards that non-whites, particularly blacks, can't maintain, and so they're eliminating them for everybody. There you go. You know, a wonderful story.
Well, you know, these were the stories that I compiled in my book back in 2010, which seems like a lifetime ago now. I tried to compile the most extreme of the absurdities of what was passing for racism at the time. But now, you know, if there was a revised edition or a second edition, it would be, dictionary in length. I mean, this is, they have careened beyond the absurd now. I mean, and I was talking with Peter about this in the first hour. It's even with regards to the media, it's as though they write these articles just to impress one another. They're writing them for themselves because so much of the country has less than 0% faith in the media. They do, in fact, the exact opposite of what the media suggests or wants because that faith is so low. We live in such a low trust society now, as you would expect it to be in such a non homogenous society. But with regards to the incoherence of some of the actors in this pageant, this was the one more thing that I wanted to work in tonight, Jared.
James, listen to this sentence from the article, and I'm reading it verbatim. Automated enforcement has been gaining support elsewhere in the aftermath of the nation's racial reckoning following the death of George Floyd at the hands of police. From California to Virginia, citizens group, safety organizations, and elected officials and others are pointing to cameras as a race-neutral alternative to potentially biased and, for many black men, fatal police traffic stops.
How do you co-occupy a space with people? You know, I said this last week. Last week we were mentioning the anniversary, the true anniversary that should be remembered on January 6th, and that is the brutal slaying of the young white couple in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I remember I made mention of the fact that I had appeared on CNN with the spokesman of the chairman of the Knoxville chapter of the NAACP. This was, you know, primetime CNN at the time when we could still get those engagements, Jared. But he said that if the roles had been reversed, meaning that if it had been a white gang that had so brutally murdered and abducted and raped a black couple, that the news media wouldn't have covered it at all. That's a more extreme example of what you're talking about here, but what you're talking about here is no less rooted in reality. And so the question becomes, how do you co-occupy and cohabitate space with people so far removed from reality? You know, this story here, it doesn't involve a murder, but it's lunacy.
Yes, yes. Here you find absolutely unbiased, irrefutable evidence that blacks are breaking the law far more often than whites. And yet you say, wait a minute, this system that revealed this, these cameras, that's racist. And we've got to stop doing this because now we have the facts. It's just incredible. I agree. How do you live with people who see things in this utterly distorted way? And I thought it was very interesting. I was hoping that there was going to be a comment section on this article. And these days, even loony liberals are going to read something like this, and they're going to think, what? What? Wait a minute. Isn't the problem that they're breaking the law more than whites are? Isn't that obviously the problem? But no, you can't state the obvious. You've got to believe what is utterly impossible to believe, and that makes you a virtuous person in the United States today.
Well, the good news is, I guess if you can glean some good news from this, is that it has become so much more pronounced since it was even a decade ago that we can believe now that we will live to see some sort of change, whether it be cataclysmic or change for the better, as we all hope. This can't go on forever. I think something's going to happen, better or for worse, but it will change. Something will change, and it will change within our lifetimes. Now, one more thing with regards to the incoherence of some of the actors in this whole thing. We've got about a minute, maybe two remaining, but we got to get to this if we can. And before we do, ladies and gentlemen, remember, Amren.com, that's all you got to remember. Go there, read it every day. I am there every day of my life, Amren.com. Support the work that Jared Taylor and his team are doing there, and it will be something you can be proud that you're a part of. But BLM activists dumped a statue of Edward Colston, Jared, with a minute remaining. What can you tell us about that? Why is it interesting?
Well, it's interesting because this guy was a huge benefactor of the city of Bristol in England. Well, it turns out he had some minority shareholding in the Royal Africa Company, which traded in slaves. Now, this is a guy who lived from 1636 to 1721. Nothing surprising or odd about that. Well, in the wake of the Black Lives lunacy, a gang tore down his statue and dumped it into Bristol Harbor. But unlike in the United States, they were actually put on trial for destroying public property. Have you heard of anybody who pulled down any of the? No, these guys were put on trial, but they were acquitted. They were acquitted. They said that the Colston statue was indecent, abusive, and that it condoned the acceptance of racism, it celebrated the achievements of a racist mass murderer, and the continued existence of that statue was a racist hate crime, and so they were acquitted. And in fact, one of the lawyers said that their actions were in line with a long and honorable tradition of direct action protests. They, the protesters, are in essence what democracy is all about. Now, this was so outrageous. But now, again, and this is very important, when the verdicts were announced innocent, the gallery erupted in cheers and hoots. They had demonstrators out in front of the courthouse every single day. Once again, juror intimidation. They had no doubt in their mind the way they were supposed to vote. But this has so annoyed the authorities in Britain that they are considering appealing this to a higher court. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if the authorities in Britain have any backbone, because they understand the implications of saying, yeah, if these guys think that a statue is a hate crime, they're allowed to tear it down. Whoa, hold on here. And there are cooler heads in Britain than in the United States from that point of view. We'll see.
Well, I'll tell you, I won't be holding my breath over there for that one. But also, a rabid dog doesn't differentiate. So we've seen them attack statues of the Massachusetts regiment that waged war against our ancestors, Abraham Lincoln, and everybody in between, Winston Churchill. I mean, you know, they go, if they look white or even if they don't, I mean, when you're bronze, who can tell? They're going after the statues because it's an entertainment. It's a form of entertainment to some level. For some of these people. But Jared, we're going to give you the tough assignment. Next time you come on, we're going to talk about something positive. But I have enjoyed tonight, and it's been informative and enlightening, as your appearances always are. Amren.com, my friend, we'll talk to you again very soon.